And now a message from the leader of the Republican Party. Welcome to It's All Politics from NPR News. I'm Ron Elton.
And I'm Ken Rudin.
And Ken, are you the leader of the Republican Party?
Actually, I have not found a leader since the Honorable Robert Mike Duncan left last month.
It's been downhill. Mike Duncan was probably not a bad chairman of the Republican National Committee, but he happened to have that job at a disastrous time, and they had a terrible election, and it's very hard to return to office somebody who is presiding at that moment.
I think you're looking at it backwards. President Bush had an awful time because of Robert Mike Duncan, who was chairman of the Republican National Committee.
It was all at his feet.
That's right.
He was the guy who invaded Iraq.
That's right, the collapse of the financial industry.
Yes. So he dropped out pretty early in the balloting, and we wound up after six ballots with Michael Steele. Long story, but let's just go to how he has done as chairman.
Not well. First of all, he suggested that the three Republicans who voted for the stimulus package, Arlen Specter, Olympia Snow, and Susan Collins, might face primary challenges from conservatives next time they run for re-election. Specter's up in 2010. Of course, he probably will face a conservative challenger. But you don't want the chairman of the Republican National Committee to suggest that their moderate members, the few of them that are left, might face challenges from the right.
Well, especially not if you think your job is to grow the party and reach out to people who haven't been Republican comfortable lately because they may be moderate voters or independent voters. If that's your job, that's maybe not the way to do it.
And if the argument for Michael Steele is that he's an African-American who could bring new voices and new faces to the Republican Party.
And new voters.
Do you want to be restrictive with a small tent? The tent is pretty small as it is now anyway, as we saw with the results of 2006 and 2008.
I think that's right. And he was supposedly the guy who was going to go the other way and really broaden things. But the real reason we all know Michael Steele's name right now, the real reason that everybody suddenly realizes he's chairman of the RNC.
Because he was Bob Ehrlich's lieutenant governor.
Well, and
not that.
I certainly couldn't argue with that.
Rush Limbaugh.
Yeah, that's right. And because Michael Steele went on another talk show, which he does all the time, and maybe that's part of his job, and he responded to Rush Limbaugh's famous now remarks at the Conservative Political Action Conference, which you covered, Ken, by saying,
Rush Limbaugh's an entertainer. Rush Limbaugh, his whole thing is entertainment. Yes, it's incendiary.
Right.
Yes, it's ugly.
But of course, then Rush Limbaugh, the showman, will never allow something like that to drop.
If I were chairman of the Republican Party, given the state that it's in, I would quit.
And then suddenly, instead of letting it go, Michael Steele apologized.
Within 24 hours, he had apologized for his remarks, which is possibly the best thing for him to do.
No, the best thing for the White House and Rahm Emanuel and the Democratic Party.
Exactly. It may be the best thing for him to do on any sort of human level, but what it does is play totally into the hands of the White House, which some people believe have been trying to set up Rush Limbaugh as their bete noire for 6 months.
Well, it's sort of like when the Republican Party had Michael Moore to demonize, when Michael Moore actually showed up at the 2004 Republican convention.
I remember
the place erupted in booze.
That was the most fun they had.
And you had a lot of booze that day, too.
That was an entire convention. That was the most fun anybody had.
It was.
Michael Moore, I suspect.
Yeah. But the Democratic Party was not dumb enough to fall into the let's defend Michael Moore, whereas now Rush Limbaugh, you have half the Republican Party debating who's right.
Well, and they didn't make Michael Moore an honorary member of the Democratic freshman class in Congress the way the Republicans have done with Rush. Look, a lot of people in the Republican Party are enormously fond of Rush Limbaugh, and he is, in this one sense, a leader, a kind of leader in the Republican Party. He sets the tone, the resentful tone that the Republican Party adopted in the early 90s prior to their takeover of Congress in 1994, and that they seem to be adopting again in reaction to the Obama presidency.
But does that mean there's nobody in the Republican Party in elected office?
Well, let's talk about some of the people in elected office. There's a governor down in Louisiana. A lot of people were pretty excited about him until fairly recently.
Did anything go wrong?
I was what folks in the insurance industry now call a pre-existing condition.
But then there are other people in the party who can be put forward as leaders as well. There's Sarah Palin. A lot of people still looking to Sarah Palin, although she's had the good sense to stay out of Washington, D.C. lately and be much less of a presence on television than some of these other characters. And then there's John McCain, who, while he obviously lost the presidential election, remains the last person to have been the united focus and champion of the Republican Party, and he's been out front on a lot of issues lately.
It was interesting to me that both the 2008 Republican ticket, John McCain, Sarah Palin, neither of whom showed up at the CPAC conference.
Interesting thing about John McCain is that he has been to the White House more often in the last month than he probably was in the second
term
in George Bush's presidency, because Barack Obama keeps bringing him in. He wanted him there when he talked about procurement policies and the Defense Department saving money on defense contractors. He wanted him there for the discussion of fiscal responsibility. And he seems to be trying to give John McCain this huge opportunity to become a kind of bridge between the parties, a healing agent in the country. And John McCain is not entirely sure whether he wants that role or whether, in fact, he would rather be seen as still the spokesperson for the Republican Party.
I thought he might be like kind of like the role that Everett Dirksen played when Lyndon Johnson was president, the Republican leader, the de facto Republican leader in the Senate, who knows how to work with Democrats. John McCain's argument from the beginning was that I'm bipartisan, I can work with Democrats. I suspected from the beginning that McCain would be happier to see a Barack Obama in the White House than he was to see George W. Bush. And yet, since, I guess in the past couple of weeks, we have seen a different kind of John McCain.
A bitter John McCain. Yeah, bitter. Coming out and talking about how many earmarks there were in the omnibus spending bill from last year that still hasn't been finally acted upon. He said, we've got 9,500 earmarks in this bill, and he drops it on his desk for dramatic effect and says, so much for change.
It just very surprising me because even though, look, both Democrat and Republican parties are trying to tear each other apart. And we saw Rahm Emanuel on the talk show saying, well, you know, I think, you know, the Rush speaks for the Republican Party. They love to do that. But Obama has gone out of his way, I think, to at least reach out to Republicans to make a point of saying that, look, this is everybody's problem. Let's work out solving this together.
And whether it's sincere or whether it's window dressing, it has been noticed. He has gotten, from every poll that I've seen, more credit for reaching out to Republicans than Republicans have gotten for reaching back. Well, there are some other people out there we should talk
about. Could I just say one thing interesting, though, that it was interesting when Barack Obama gave his discussion about what to do with troops in Iraq and leaving 50,000. It's the left, of course, that was upset. It was John McCain who was the most supportive, whereas members of his own party were very dismissive.
Another moment of that McCain ambivalence that we were talking about. But there are some other people who have also been staying out of Washington and staying out of the limelight and not suffering for it. And I would nominate here Mitt Romney. I'd say, in fact, he has torn a page from the book of Richard Nixon back in the 1960s. And this was the part of Richard Nixon's book you want to keep. Because after the 1964 Republican disaster behind Barry Goldwater, there was no question of Barry Goldwater being the standard bearer for the Republican Party in the future. But who was it going to be? There was an enormous vacuum in the middle of the 1960s for the Republicans, much as there is today. And the man who filled that vacuum, to many of our amazement at the time and ever since, was Richard Nixon, the repudiated nominee from 1960 who had lost a bid for governor
in 62 to Pat Brown. Right.
You don't have Nixon to kick around anymore.
And back then, they were looking at a new face named Romney. George Romney, the governor of Michigan, who was elected in 1962, was thought to be the new face of the Republican Party. And yet Nixon went around campaigning for Republicans around
quietly,
the country quietly.
Quietly, not a lot of television.
In 65 and 66, picking up chits around the country. And that's very similar to what we see Mitt Romney doing right now.
That's right. George Romney, his father, tried a somewhat different strategy, more of a high-visibility media strategy that blew up on him because of some things he said about Vietnam. And then, slow and steady wins the race. Along comes Richard Nixon, collecting them one at a time, one delegate at a time. And he got to that convention in Miami 1968, absolutely unassailable.
Let's win this one for Ike.
What Richard Nixon had going for him back then and what Mitt Romney has going for him now is both of them were out of office. George Romney still had a state to run. Other candidates had state to run. Mitt Romney is not out of – he didn't run for re-election as Massachusetts governor.
Smart.
Smart, exactly, because he would have been defeated. As a matter of fact, somebody made a point of saying, well, he's not doing well with people in Massachusetts.
That's a good thing for a Republican.
I was going to say –
Well, and he also did a smart thing in dropping out of the presidential race in 2008 when he did.
Yeah.
And one of the things that you need to note is that at that same CPAC conference where Rush Limbaugh got all the headlines, they took a straw poll for 2012 and Mitt Romney won. And he won pretty easily.
I can't believe we're talking about this 1,353 days in advance, but we should mention that this is the third CPAC straw poll he's won in a row, and he won it last time as well.
Building strength.
Exactly.
Well, but okay, there's one other thing that he's doing. He's becoming a mainstay for a lot of people in Congress, in the House and in the Senate. He's telling them he's going to be out there raising money for them for 2010. He's advising them on how they should be tactically handling the Barack Obama presidency, and he's giving them advice on the economy.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
He has credibility when it comes to business and matters of finance.
We've said this in the podcast before, but I've always felt that had he run on his business acumen in 2008 and not as a convert to social issues on abortion and stem
or national
cell
security, for that matter.
But I'm saying when he was governor of Massachusetts, when he ran against Ted Kennedy in 94, he was pretty much pro-choice, pro-stem cell, pro-gay rights.
Even gay rights, yeah.
Right. But now when people are most nervous about the economy, nervous about whether their government can handle it, his business experience and know-how, if you buy the fact that he has that, and many people do, that's the thing I think that sells best as a candidate. Meg Whitman, same thing, the former CEO of eBay, running in governor of California. Business experience, maybe more than ideology, may trump other issues in 2010 and beyond.
It's the mood of the nation at the moment. All right, if we can't decide who the leader of the Republican Party is, I think we can decide who the leader of the Republican Party is not.
And that is
Jim Bunning, Hall of Fame pitcher, second-term senator from Kentucky.
He threw a perfect game, or certainly a no-hitter against the Mets when he was with the Phillies.
That is correct.
But it sounds like he's been hit in the head with some of the beanballs.
I think a couple of them might have bounced back on Jim. Lately, he's made an extraordinarily, shall we say, tone-deaf remark about the cancer of Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Right,
that
she has 8 months to live or something like that?
He said she'd be dead by fall.
Yeah.
And he also then made a remark about if the National Republican Senate Committee did not want him to run for re-election.
Don't even go that far. You're skipping ahead too much. First of all, he called John Cornyn, the head of the NRSC, tone-deaf because, you know, obviously John Cornyn doesn't know what he's doing. When Mitch McConnell said he wasn't sure if Jim Bunning was going to run again, he said Mitch McConnell must not be paying attention to anything anymore.
Yeah, Mitch McConnell being, of course, the Republican leader in the Senate and his senior senator from Kentucky.
Yeah.
First, he said, if they don't raise money for me for my re-election in 2010, I will sue them.
Well,
I will sue them for not
because the rumor was that a Republican from Kentucky came to Washington to meet with campaign officials saying, I'm thinking about running.
And a buddy of Mitch McConnell's, exactly. Which didn't help anything.
Right.
So when the committee then said, well, you can't sue the committee, he says, look, you want to know how mad I am? I'll resign, create a vacancy, and let Steve Beshear, the Democratic governor of Kentucky, appoint my successor.
Democratic successor.
And possibly creating 60th
seat vote,
for the Democrats in the Senate. Now, how mean and how, shall we say, bitter is Jim Bunning?
Well, first of all, Bunning has denied saying that, even though he's quoted in the Louisville Courier Journal as saying it.
In public.
But the thing is, he is an angry person who's been angry for a long time.
He was angry in baseball.
Exactly. And, you know, a lot of Republicans are upset about the five Republicans who are retiring, Brownback and Voinovich and, you know, those guys. But I think
Mel Martinez.
They would.
Judd Gregg.
Kit Bond. Okay, we've done
that'd
it.
That'd be all five.
But I think they would love to add a six. They would love for Jim Bunning to not run again because I think the Republican Party has a better chance of holding the seat with a different candidate.
That's right. And that's clearly why they're willing to go through all this grief because they think otherwise Bunning is just going to drop the ball.
It's amazing that Democrats don't have any problems of their own in the Senate.
There is a major problem for the Democrats in the Senate, and he doesn't wait until 2010 to become a problem. He's a problem right now. And that would be the burrowing in of Roland Burris. Yes. He has had yet another story come out about his ties to Rod Blagojevich, the governor who appointed him to the Senate seat, supposedly with no quid pro quo whatsoever.
With no conversation about...
Never talked to any of those guys. Oh, well, his brother and three or four of the other staff members. And my son did get a job, but, you know, none of that really influenced anything. There was no commerce between us.
The problem here is severalfold. First of all, you're going to have to prove that perjury was committed for him to be removed from the Senate. And obviously, as you mentioned, you've mentioned many times, that nobody has been expelled from the Senate since the Civil War.
You know what? They would have expelled a lot of these other senators.
That's true.
They would have expelled Bob Packwood, Harrison Williams, all of them would have been expelled. There's only one reason they were not, and that is because they resigned.
But here's the problem. One of the problems, of course, is that Pat Quinn, the new governor of Illinois, is now saying he should resign and we should have a special election. That's the greatest news the Republicans have heard, given the fact that everything they've been hearing is bad. Two, as we saw during the stimulus package, Ted Kennedy is too ill to vote. The thought of the Republicans picking up a seat in Illinois, which is possible in a special election. Mark Kirk, the congressman from the Chicago suburbs.
Yes, but is the prospect of losing a seat to the Republicans really that much more important than what could possibly still be salvaged in terms of honor from this whole situation?
I'm not sure. I think that whenever they have the primary next year, Roland Burris either doesn't run again or he runs again and gets clobbered and that's the end of it.
Well, it's not the end of it because he continues to serve through the rest of the 111th Congress,
right,
which means he's here for another almost 22 months. But We've got to move on. One reason that it is so crucial to the Democrats that they hold on to every single seat they possibly can in their drive towards 60 is that they still don't have the seat from Minnesota that they thought they won back in November.
But they might soon. And I think the feeling is because we saw right now Norm Coleman, apparently his legal challenge is failing, is now saying this is a flawed process. Let's have a do-over. Now,
throw out the election.
Yeah,
from November.
Now, you know that when you have no further argument to make, then that's what you call for. The last time the Senate did that, of course, was 75 in the New Hampshire race, Durkin and Wyman. And it was different then because nobody really had a lead. You have a Democratic Senate now. You have Al Franken with a 225-vote lead. The Supreme Court, the three-judge panel in Minnesota, is saying that Coleman, really, his arguments are not going well. Harry Reid has said he expects Al Franken to be sworn in by early April. I think that's right.
I think that latest signal from Norm Coleman, I agree with you, is a white flag, in a sense, tantamount to one. All right. Back in Illinois just for a moment, Rahm Emanuel, of course, left his seat in Congress to become the chief of staff for President Obama. That is a rather famous seat. It was once held by the notorious Rod Blagojevich. Previous to that, the equally notorious Dan Rostenkowski.
No, you're missing the very important Michael Patrick Flanagan.
For one term.
Right, who beat Rostenkowski in 94.
In 1994, that's correct. And most recently in the hands of Rahm Emanuel, the skyrocket of a congressman and a force in Washington.
But, you know, all three, Rostenkowski, Blagojevich, and Emanuel, all household names. I mean, people know who they are. And now the latest household name is?
Mike Quigley.
I know. Well, Baby Quigley, as we call him.
Well, listen, Mike Quigley may turn out to be the biggest name of all, Ken. We just don't know yet. That's what's so great about politics.
Now, of course, he does have a general election on April 7th, but except for Michael Patrick Flanagan, no Republican has won that seat since 1930.
Suffice it to say,
Mike Quigley will be the next congressman.
Yeah, yeah.
From the 5th district.
In his most recent primary, the winner among the Republicans had 900 votes in the primary. All right. A couple of other Republicans we want to mention before we wrap it up today, and that is our good old friends Karl Rove and Harriet Myers. Are they going to be back here in Washington, Ken?
Is she on the Supreme Court yet?
Not yet.
No, but they will be testifying before John Conyers, House Judiciary Committee, about what they know or knew about the firing of the U.S. attorneys.
You know, on one level, Ken, this would seem to violate the spirit of what President Obama has said about all the alleged crimes of people during the Bush era.
You'd like to look forward.
That's right. We don't want to go back there. But on the other hand, this particular settlement between John Conyers, the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, and Rove and Myers and their attorneys would later rest the necessity for the Obama administration to prosecute or pursue some sort of prosecution on the contempt citation that otherwise came from Congress.
That's not to say that Democrats like Pat Leahy doesn't want to have his Truth and Reconciliation conference to go back into perhaps previous crimes, Abu Ghraib, things like that. But I think this is one thing. I think the Democrats are just satisfied that they have Karl Rove and Harriet Myers, and they have them, although albeit not in public, But they want to hear what they have to say.
I think they're willing to say it's better than nothing. That's it for this week's political podcast.
You can follow NPR's political coverage at npr.org/politics.
I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin.
Join us again next week for It's All Politics from NPR. Well, the names have all changed since you hung around. But those dreams have remained and they've turned around. Who'd have thought they'd reach us?